This talk was given by Michael Yukon Grody at the Zen Center of New York City. Yukon is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. Thank you for being here on this auspicious occasion. We're preparing for the new year, preparing our lives for the new year to begin again. You know, up at the monastery, for those of you who don't know, we have a wonderful space up in Mount Tremper that's about 20 minutes north of Woodstock. And we're celebrating there the Rahatsu, which is the end of the year Sesshin. So they've been sitting, a lot of sitting from 4:30 in the morning. You get up nice and early. And it's like a... If you've not done a Sesshin, it's like a beautiful dance. You know, you sit, and then you do liturgy, and then you have Oryoki practice, which is a way of eating in the Zendo formally, learning how to take just the right amount of food. And so it's a beautiful, a formal meal. And then more sitting, and then some rest, and then work practice to prepare all of the things that need preparing, and then more sitting, and talks given by, right now, the Hojin Sensei and Zuise Sensei are up there. Shugen Roshi had to leave. His mother is in the process of dying. She's 95. And Shugen's brother has told us that she's having a really good time. I mean, how often do you hear that, you know? It's fairly unusual. Shugen said, well, that may be true or it may not be true. He leaves that open. And so they've been sitting in this kind of rhythm at the monastery from on Wednesday, and they'll continue through Monday, and then they've been building up all this juriki. It's quite intense, and then at midnight they celebrate with 108 rounds on the bell, and then they go downstairs and have a champagne breakfast and blow out all their juriki, and you know, with a champagne breakfast. But I can feel myself, having done that for so many years, I can feel it. You can kind of feel it in yourself. You know, you feel it. I feel it in me. That kind of quiet, the depth of that practice is really beautiful. And as far as I'm concerned, the only way to bring in the new year. You know, so I call this talk the nuts and bolts of Buddhism for the new year. The nuts and bolts. You know, as practitioners, whether you are you've been on the path for years or only practicing for a little while, it doesn't generally take too long to understand that it's part of our human nature, and it has been bred into us that what we spend time seeking, a sense of security and this unending happiness, and thinking we can know how all of this works, is actually a pipe dream. And in this continuing cycle of living, constant ups and downs, you know, we tend to compartmentalize things and to feel like we have a sense of control, which we really don't. And despite the ins and outs of a life of constant, fleeting, changing conditions. You know, like food pleasures, for instance. You know, right now at this time of the year, there is a lot of gastric discomfort. I can guarantee you. And those, all of those, you know, sexy pleasures at this time of the year are as fleeting, as we say in Zen, as the dewdrops on the tips of 1,000 grasses. Right. Gain is always followed by loss. And is Teresa here? Is she okay? Yeah, where? Oh, okay. Oh, good. Okay. Gain is always followed by loss. Is the law. And expectations will inevitably lead to disappointment. That's another law. And when we get accustomed to all those shiny external objects that we think we can't live without, it is not long that then we become bored with them and then look for the next fix. You know? In running after happiness, we run into the wall of habit, then addiction, and continue to chase after new satisfactions to replace old comforts that keep slipping away just outside of our reach. If who we are is what we have, and what we have still cannot make us happy, then who the hell are we? You know, what's going on here, really? Now, do not misunderstand me. You know, I enjoy my nice warm bed. I love going out for a great meal. When the sangha, somebody in the sangha takes me out for a really good dinner, love it. It's fantastic. It's great. Having enough is not, and having enough is not a good thing. It's a very nice thing to have enough. But somehow we get stuck and we cling to that good thing. And the grasping is where we get caught and go down that rabbit hole. You know, we get stuck. And the relative view of life, which is just a small dose of what else there may be. So I have this, my favorite Buddha sutra, coming from the Pali Canon. I use this all the time. It usually gives me a springboard into my talk. So, as I'm saying this, if you've heard this before, I think you can't hear it enough anyway. At least I can't. You know, I mean, it's at the heart of this entire practice. And so the Buddha says we are of the nature to grow old. There's no escaping growing old. And we are of the nature to grow ill. There's no escaping illness. And we are of the nature to die, there is no escaping death. Everyone that I know and everything that I know will be separated from us one day. Right? My actions are my... There's no escaping that they will be separated from us. My actions are my only true belongings. There's no escaping the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. It's the condition that our condition is in. You know, that is what we have been offered. That is our inheritance. And I always get so excited when I come to the part of my actions are my only true belongings, because it gives me the opportunity, first of all, to take responsibility for what it is that I do and not blame. And then it also releases me in some way for that, from this constant idea that things are going to go the way I want them to. Good luck. You know, good luck with that. It's not going to happen, ever. So I just like to have that, keep that close, you know. It's a great way to begin the new year, I think. My actions are the ground on which I stand. And considering so much time and busyness, we spend a lot of time and a lot of silliness. I mean, you know, sometimes I'll pop on the phone, you know, check out YouTube. You know, it's ridiculous. And as long as I see that this is what I'm choosing to do with that time, in that moment, I'm okay with it. If I think I'm getting something from this, you know, give me a break. You know? So we're doing this, I'm looking at stuff on the phone. And while our life is like what the Buddha said. He said that, you know, we are like fish flapping about in a shrinking puddle of water. You know, he lays it out as it is, folks. You know, it's pretty wonderful. We are just surviving in this saha world rather than practicing reality. You know, this world will never be enough to satisfy our craving. Ever. It never will be enough to satisfy our thirst, which goes round and round, not only in the material world, but in the spiritual world as well, of thinking we are someone who has something, you know, of being somebody special, you know. It's a trap, man. It's a trap. All of this powerful ego holding these ideas about the way things should be, and in that way we create these gaps and the distance between each other, thinking that you're out there and I'm in here. So in the Pali Canon, the Buddha is talking to practitioners and says, do not go upon what has been acquired by repeated hearing, nor upon tradition, nor upon rumor, nor upon what is in a scripture, nor upon surmise, nor upon an axiom, nor upon specious reasoning, nor upon a bias towards a notion that has been pondered over, nor upon another's seeming ability, nor upon the... I mean, he doesn't mess around. I mean, he's covering the whole thing. Nor upon the consideration the monk is our teacher, when you yourself know, only you know, these things are good. These things are not blamable. These things are praised by the wise, undertaken and observed. These things lead to benefit and happiness. Enter on and abide in them. You know. So my words today and this whole thing, you know, take them in. Take what you find resonates in you. And then the rest, just kind of wash out of your ears, you know. Wash it. We say, take the water out of the Esopus, right? And just take all that water out of the river up at the monastery and just wash it out of your ears. You know, let it be. So actually sitting down and practicing Zazen, practicing the Dharma, putting yourself down on the cushion and stopping is what we call beginning to liberate your mind, your habits, the ideas that you have about yourself, conditioned ways of entertaining yourself. It's perhaps a different kind of thrill than one experiences in the world, but it's all yours. Whatever it is you're experiencing, no one can take it from you, simply because it's not external. It's in your heart and it's in your mind. It's unconditioned, unconditional. It can provide a direction to go, and within that a certain kind of comfort, a certain kind of ease. All of this comes down to relaxing the ego enough to take refuge in doing what you're doing while you're doing it. There's refuge in that. Refuge in letting go of what we think will fix us is over there. That there is something wrong with us that needs fixing. To take refuge in creating a mind that is receptive and allows not knowing to fill us with the kind of curiosity, you know, kind of wonder, what is this? We really don't know as much as we think we do. You know? The Buddha asks us to have few desires and to keep things simple and direct. We love complication. We think it's not valuable unless it's complicated. You know, it's such a shame. To me, you really can't find any more magic than that of being awake. Being Buddha, taking refuge in Buddha, being awake. Not to be lost in what you'd rather have that's in front of you, but to be attentive to what's right in front of you. You know, the ability not to be immediately reactive to every new circumstance that might not be to our liking comes from simple repetition of releasing that ego and moving into the breath, you know. It's ideas are contained and held and made static. So these crazy, you know, neural pathways that make up this brain, you know, it's been studied and verified that that brain is changed when you move into stillness and you allow the mind to settle into stillness. Those neural pathways are changed, you know. This pause makes it more possible to be intimate with what is unknown and to know that this will pass as well. Nothing is static. It takes practice to realize and accept this, you know. There's so many ups and downs in this practice, and no question it takes a steadfastness to continue. You know, letting go, or I found in the Pali Canon the other day, I was looking up, and the Buddha calls a letting go unbinding. I love that. It's an unbinding. And then coming back. It takes persistence. And a little bit of craziness, a little bit of madness mixed in to the mix, I'd say. Just a touch, you know? Just enough. You know? Here the Buddha offers more medicine. In the Kalama Sutra, he says, if there is no life after this one, you know, no rebirth, then at the very least, by refraining from harmfulness in this life, I will live with ease, a mind clear of the agitation, born of hostility, animosity, free from all the trouble such actions bring. This is all contained within that pause I was talking about, that pause, that just taking a moment before you react. Ease and knowing you're enough as you are, a state more comforting than anything purchased and consumed. Right? Maybe the only game in town. You know, the Dharma punks were talking about that. As our teacher Dada Roshi would say, and remind us that this is a practice of a long-distance runner and not of a sprinter, it's a lifetime practice. It just continues. You don't get the gold ring at the end of the day. You know, you don't get the medal or the reward. It's a continuing practice that you do until you're dead. It becomes part of the fabric of your life. When the Buddha says of awakening, ignorance will be destroyed and all that is true revealed to one who is aware and persistent. All that is true will be revealed. I would say it's more like my experience is that what is true keeps being revealed. All that is true being revealed for me, good luck. It hasn't happened to me, so I can't be talking about that. But it seems to be a process. As time goes on for me, I can turn towards more what feels like reality as opposed to away from it, you know, to something else. It may feel better in the moment, but in the long run it's not. It's not like a flash in the sky or a bell goes off or something, you know. It's more like an unfolding. That's my experience. Slow and deliberate. You just keep practicing, you know. And within that, and what makes this practice so intense and so challenging, is within that there is a whole lot of heartbreak. And there's not a path in this life that does not lead to heartbreak. It is the essence of what it is to be human. David White puts it like this, he's my favorite poet. He says, realizing its inescapable nature, we can see heartbreak not as the end of the road or the cessation of hope, but as the close embrace of the essence of what we have wanted or about to lose. Heartbreak asks us not to look for an alternative path, because there is not an alternative path. It is an introduction to what we love and have loved, an inescapable and often beautiful question. Something and someone that has been with us all along, asking us to be ready for the ultimate letting go, the ultimate unbinding. And fortunately, we have this beautiful treasure of the teachings of the Dharma and of the Sangha. You know, we do this together. We give up together all that we would like to hold forever. We give that up together, moment to moment to moment in this practice that is so stark and so uncompromising, and yet it's the only game in town. The true signature and perhaps even the miracle of human love is helplessness. Right? It's like, and all the more miraculous because it is a helplessness which we wittingly or unwittingly choose. In, say, our love of a child, or our love of a partner, or work, or a road we have to take against all odds, like this practice. Well, the odds are improved by a group of people that have chosen to stop, you know, and to stop together, taking refuge in the Sangha, you know, in the wisdom of our silence, of the shame and hurt that longs to be tempered, you know, in this journey of ours. We can be guaranteed, I can guarantee you, and at least it's in my experience, that we will fall short and trip and groan along the way, you know. Sometimes I just can't stop whining to my teacher. Just a big whine, you know. But to forgive ourselves these trespasses and these transgressions and to continue, you know. This path is only made by walking it, which means to sit and become still and see what unfolds from there. And that occurs when you get bored to death with all those scenarios that keep popping up in your head over and over again. You get tired of talking to yourself. And you've been sitting enough to realize some of the gifts that come from placing yourself on the cushion and allowing your mind to settle. Some of those gifts start being revealed. And that's when you really start sitting. And then, of course, you've had some great sitting and you notice that and you want that again and you try and produce that again and you can just forget about it. You know, it just doesn't happen like that. It just can't happen like that. Because that's the ego in place again. I want more of this and it just can't happen. Yeah. So, welcome to the preparation for your New Year's, you know. Welcome to this time in your life that is ever so precious and ever so fleeting, you know. And knowing that we're in it together gives me great comfort that I'm not alone in that, that we're all doing this together. This is by Antonio Machado, called Traveler, your footprints. Traveler, your footprints are the only road, nothing else. Traveler, there is no road. You make your own path as you walk. As you walk, you make your own road. And when you look back and see the path, you will never travel again. Traveler, there is no road, only a ship's wake on the sea.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.